Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'll be honest, I feel very good tonight, and I have not felt well in a long time. I felt so good, I fried squash today, and I ate it, and I'm not ashamed to tell you that I did. It was good. It was real good. I love this time of year. Oh, Wendy, stop. Everybody, go back to doing something else. Okay, good. So, anyway, I feel good. I have not felt well. I'm not trying to tell you that I've had what everybody else is having, but I just kept... I've done some research, and I don't know if this has no weight behind it whatsoever, but I believe the norovirus has entered my house, and I can't get rid of it. It's one of those deals where you can just continually reinfect yourself. I have Clorox and Lysol, everything. Boy, we have got... It's either white or smells like Clorox. You know what I'm saying? We've gotten serious about it because I don't know. It's a real thing. I've told you many times I'm susceptible to stomach stuff, but this one has been quite unique and different in what it has done. But I feel well today. Not that you care about any of the things I just said to you, but I'm excited about tonight. I haven't really, I guess, haven't taught Bible class in a while anywhere, and I'm excited about the opportunity to teach to you tonight, and maybe my enthusiasm will leak into you some, and you'll leave here excited too. I'll tell you one story about going to Fried Hardeman and Horizons. Anna Reed and I made her take off. I asked her. I didn't make her do anything. I asked her to take off work Tuesday, and we left Monday night, and we drove up there and spent a little bit of time. Anna Reed is going through a very difficult time as a mother. So Charlie is leaving her and going to E.O. Kaufman next year, and so she's only taking Sloan to school. And she is struggling. And also, Macy's going to high school. And I'll be honest with you, at no point have I ever dated or married this woman did I think, you know what, she's really going to struggle when these kids leave home. But she is. She is going to struggle, I can tell you. And Charlie got up there and he didn't have a roommate. And she was like, oh, I'm just torn up about that. And I thought about myself, that'd be the greatest gift you could get. Go up there and get a room by yourself. But whatever. Anyway, he was having a good time. And I saw several people that I knew that I went to camp with, and we got to talking. And one of them was talking about this girl that went to camp with us when we were kids, who was very pretty, and she had a daughter there. And I told Charlie, he was in there playing ping pong. We were talking. I said, Charlie, you need to find this girl and give her a kiss. And of course, you know, Charlie, he is embarrassed and shy and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't encouraging him like this was going to happen. So I received a text today, your dad found her. She's 17. Thanks a lot. And I was like, that may be a little old for you, buddy. That may be a little old for you. All right. So we're going to continue our discussion about idols tonight. By the way, Horizons look so wonderful. And I know I'm telling because I see Jeff up here. They're packed. It's to capacity. And there were tears like all over the campus, like different things. People were doing stuff going on. There were people everywhere. And our kids just keep getting baptized. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing, isn't it? Yes, it is. Hannah was baptized. I always want to call her Haley and I get nervous. But she was baptized. Was it Monday night? Monday night. Mm-hmm. Monday night. Okay, so we're going to talk about the idol of knowledge tonight. And I don't know, I don't usually do stories, but I think that in order to talk about the idol of knowledge, I'm going to have to tell some stories about, I tell stories, they're usually my own. I'm talking about other stories. But first of all, I would like to say that there are things that we would be better off not knowing. Now, that is a very difficult thing to say, but in my opinion, it's a very mature thing to say. Because let's think about it for a minute. What got David and Bathsheba in trouble was David got knowledge about what Bathsheba looked like with no clothes on. And because of that knowledge, it leads to a lot of bad things. Eventually, he invites her, you know, to the castle, and it goes here and to and fro. So sometimes there is knowledge that we would be better off not having. The second thing about knowledge is, knowledge in and of itself is not a bad thing. And this is why the idols and the discussion of idolatry is so important, I think, because many of the idols that we have are a good thing, and some of them are even a necessary thing. And for it to become an idol, it has become the main thing, and that is where we fall into trouble. And when we talk about knowledge, we have to say that there is an absolute craze in our culture for knowledge. It doesn't matter what kind of problem you have today. If you have a problem, you begin to look for a professional. You know, someone who has knowledge about whatever it is that you're struggling with. But we're going to talk about Jack for a moment before we start our discussion on knowledge. And then we'll lead in from this discussion about Jack and the Bible and knowledge being good and bad. And maybe three ways that we have to be very careful with knowledge. But Jack lives in a small village, and every day, every morning, he wakes up to drink his coffee, and he looks out his window, and he sees this huge mountain in the distance, and he thinks to himself, it would be pretty cool to travel. Traveling would be pretty cool. And he thinks about what it would be like to stand on that peak, on that mountaintop that he sees. One morning, Jack wakes up, and he goes out, and there's this beautiful carriage at his front door, and a man standing there dressed appropriately to be a carriage driver. I wonder what you're imaging right now. I don't know what a carriage driver wears, but he looks like a carriage driver, and he tells Jack, I'll carry you anywhere you want to go. And before this moment, Jack had no reality or possibility of travel, but in this moment, he knows where he wants to go. He wants to go to the top of that mountain, and he wants to see. And on the trip there, it was amazing. I mean, he saw things he had never seen before. He heard sounds he had never heard before, and he just saw wonderful, wonderful, beautiful sights. And then eventually he gets to the top of the mountain, and there is a ginormous castle there. Ginormous. Okay, I'm going to run one rabbit, and I'm going to come back to that. So I drove Sloan to my mom and dad's Monday before we went, and he was playing a video game, which he had accumulated 300 million gold on it. And he said, Dad, if we had this money, I would buy us something that's bigger than a mansion. And I went, castle. He said, yes, I'd buy us a castle. I said, who'd have the biggest dream? He goes, me. I'm the one that had the $300 million. I was like, okay, good enough, fair enough. So he drives on top of this mountain. He gets to the very top and this beautiful castle. And the king is there, and he invites him in to eat with him. And he comes in, and he begins to learn so much. And he learns that this king is the person who built the village in which he lives. And basically everything that he has seen from that point to that point was made possible by this man in this living in this castle. But before long, Jack gets an itch and he decides he wants to get back in the carriage and ride because that was such a fun time. But you can imagine as the days turn into months and the months turn into years, how that carriage ride is going for Jack, right? It's a bumpy thing. He's sick and tired of it. He feels like he's seen all that he wants to see. And so he's been places. He smelled all the smells he wants to smell. And he becomes tired. And I tell you this story because what we're going to talk about in here, and there, I've got a quote in here from a guy who taught at Princeton Theological Seminary for 35 years. And he said that at some point, there are people who fall in love with theology for theology's sake and forget about God. And so when we talk about the accumulation of knowledge in God, I want you to know that we must never lose focus. That the point of all of it is definitely the castle and the king that lives and abides within it. And Jack had this opportunity to sit with the king, and the whole carriage was made possible by the king, and Jack's entire existence was made possible by the king. And he had this opportunity to be in his presence, and instead, he wanted to go out and get more new knowledge about adventures and what have you. When we come into this idea of knowledge, too, you have to think about the Garden of Eden. Can anyone tell me the name of the tree in the Garden of Eden? It is the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Can you, I don't know. Anna Reed has this ability to go back in her childhood and pull up vivid, vivid, long, drawn out memories. I cannot do that. I can go back and get a moment like when I was 14, you know, maybe or 12. But I cannot go back. I can't do this. I can't go back and draw all of these beautiful moments out. So when I was thinking about this and this idea of knowledge, this tree that's going to give knowledge of both good and evil, I think to myself, like, what did Adam and Eve feel like this moment before they ate this fruit? You realize that they did not know what guilt was? How many of you would at least live 2 days longer if guilt was removed from your life right now? You know, just think about it. Like, they have no idea what it is to be guilty. They don't have that knowledge. Let me look. Everybody but Jeff up here probably knows what it's like to be guilty, right? I pulled up today to his brother's place with the dry cleaner. It's my favorite. He come out and he was sweating profusely. And I thought, dude, you're actually working today. He didn't like that comment. And he said, McAnally, give me your clothes and get out of here. And I said, yes, sir. tossed them to him and left. Anyway, but when I think about a world where we don't know guilt, well, first of all, there's two types of guilt. There is the guilt where you're guilty and you should feel guilt. And then there's the false sense of guilt, right? Which probably every parent or every individual in here has probably felt a dose of that before in their lives, where you feel guilty about something you can't do. Like, I feel guilty about my brother a lot. I feel like if I lived in Iuka, I could help him a lot. You know, at the same time, I am not my brother's happiness. I am not my brother's conscience, and I cannot do that. And a lot of times, it's just a false sense of guilt, and it's not guilt at all. But not only that, they had no knowledge of evil. Forget guilt. They had no knowledge of evil. Now, you think about it. Now, every one of us in here are mad at Adam and Eve. It's true. And we can't be mad too long because we have the realization that we also, at some point, have not only sat down and taken a bite out of the old fruit tree, we've taken a nap or two under that tree, right? And just eaten to our bellies were full. But think about it, before that moment and before the anger that we have for that moment, not knowing evil. I don't usually ask you to raise your hands, but I want you to raise your hand in here if you've ever been hurt by evil. Have you ever been hurt by evil? Now, I directed that question very specifically because I could have said, have you ever been evil and hurt somebody? But we'd probably have to raise our hand on that one too, just if we were honest, right? Okay? But I didn't want to get you guilty, all guilty like that. I'm just trying to get you to think about evil. Oh, we don't know everything, but we know evil when we see it. They didn't. They had no concept of that. And so it's in this moment of this consumption that the world changes forever. I don't know if that's how heaven will be. I just know that all the bad will be removed. And God stresses that. In the imagery that he plans of the eternity that we will have of him, he paints pictures of the removal of the things that we would say are negative, like tears, pain, sorrow, evil. The Bible praises knowledge, and this is something that I want to start with. I've got my sheet here. I want to make sure I get these right. But first, we'll start with Proverbs 10:14. I could go through Proverbs for quite a while. Proverbs uses wisdom as a lady throughout the book, the author does. But in Proverbs 10:14, the Bible says, "The wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the fool brings ruin near." The wise lay up knowledge. Proverbs 18:15. "An intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge." Immediately, any discussion on knowledge in the Old Testament, I'm going to go to Hosea 4:6, a passage we are all familiar with. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I reject you from being a priest to me. And since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children." Big. Knowledge is important. 2 Peter in the Christian Virtues, chapter 1, verse 5. "For this reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, your virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control." Now, this is that image that we all know very well of knowledge being important. And as we've stated many times before in our discussion about idols, idols are something sometimes that are good and sometimes they are necessary, but it's when it leaves the realm of good and necessary and it becomes the main thing. So our next portion, I think that we have to deal with something that has reached godlike status in our culture. And that is science. Does anyone know where the word science comes from? What language it originates from? It's a Latin word. Does anyone know what the word science means? You don't have to stretch. What are we talking about tonight? Knowledge. The word science is a Latin word that means knowledge. And science has reached the tier of godhood in our world in which we live today. in all things that we have used throughout the years to fill in with God, they feel that they can now fill in with science. Now, I want you to know that I believe that sometimes the Christian community talks about the scientific community in a very ignorant way, in a very inappropriate way. At the same time, I do also believe in the world in which we currently dwell and live, that science has been placed on this God tier as if it can answer all things. But science cannot answer all things. It can't. My mom would be very mad, but I'll tell you, one time I got in trouble in school because someone asked me what the scientific method was, and I held my hand out of this. I told him that was the scientific method. I know the scientific method. I'm well aware. But it's those things that we have to be able to feel, see, touch, taste, and we have to be able to experiment on these things. And science has given us so much. I think about Paul Pierce sitting back here on the back pew. Science has, without a doubt, given him longer life. You know, it has given him longer life. Science has done that. Because we have been able to go in and look at these different viruses and diseases that attack the body, and we've come up with ways to either elongate our lives or to kill and remove things from our life. Science is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It takes now, in our country, one dairy cow for what it used to take 25 dairy cows to produce in milk in our country. And again, this is science. This is things that we've been able to go in and test. And if you want to see something fun about dairy cows, by the way, they have an auction every year at Michigan University. And the top tiered cows go for over $200,000 and $300,000. Yes. I wish I owned two of those cows. I'm kidding. That's just a fun thought. Sorry. But science has done wonderful things for us. But there are certain things that science will never be able to fill in. And at that point, when science gets to a place where it cannot fill in, it does what science can never do, and it makes an educated guess. But let me tell you what science can never do. It can never guess. Good science falls in between two known points. You don't ever have to doubt what I'm about to tell you. Science falls in between the known. It will never fall into the unknown. Now, we can take known factors or known variables and what they call extrapolate, or that's a highfalutin word, an educated guess, like carbon dating. Carbon dating is such an interesting thing. And how they come up with this, I don't know the guy that was sitting around that thought of this idea of the decay ratio and how much carbon. I mean, it's amazing to me how this person did this. But ultimately, what they are saying when they carbon date something is not this is the absolute reality scientifically. What they're saying is this is our best guess. And guessing is not science. Science falls in between two known points. If it's not known, then it's not science. And so that gets into the realm of understanding that science will never be able to tell us how our world was created, because it will never go and be able to create the creation, right? Or the Big Bang or whatever. It can hypothesize all it wants, and that is not science. It's just an educated guess. And I know I've said this before, but every time I say the word educated guess, I want somebody to, sometime in the history of mankind, to get up and be like, I'm going to give an uneducated guess right here. I'd just love for that to happen. I don't know. I'm sorry. That's free. You can dwell on that. What do you think? I'm going to take an uneducated guess here. Anyway, so it is an educated guess. Now, again, looking at science and having an understanding that it is good, and it has done wonderful things for us, but also understanding that it can never reach the tier of elevation that we have given it in our culture and society, because it can only be things that are tested. And we as humans have to be the ones using the scientific method to get to these hypotheses and producing theories and getting eventually to the realm of fact, if you will. I mean, I don't know, if you want to get scared, I can tell you right now, if you're one of those people who likes to really study and get scared, go study a black hole. We have never in the history of mankind seen a black hole. We don't know if there are black holes. What we know is that from math and physics that we have absolutely got black holes, but we've never seen one, right? And that... It takes a moment for me, right? It's one of those things where it just takes a moment. And we found planets the same way, by the way, because mathematically, and there's a void and the stream and all that kind of stuff. I get all of that. But we've never seen this yet. We just know that more than likely they are there. So, now that I've talked about that, I want to get to this point and say that I believe that people like Richard Dawkins have failed the scientific community. I'm not trying to say that this man was ignorant or this man was just not bright in any form or fashion. That's the opposite. What I'm saying, though, is that he constantly removed God from science. And because of that, I feel like he made himself weak. And that's just my thought. I will say that Mr. Dawkins definitely, for the very first time, made the atheistic community evangelistic. Militaristic, if you will, and evangelistic. And got up and started going out and trying to convert the masses. And I'll give him credit for that. Not that I think that's a good thing. But so now that we have this idea of science and what it is, what it isn't, what are some ways for us to look at knowledge and it become a bad thing? First, pride. I have struggled with this idea or concept of pride for a long time in my life because I want you to know that I am proud to be from the state of Mississippi. Now, I say that. And I know, laugh it up. I tell people all the time, if people that are born in Mississippi are not proud of that state, no one is going to be proud of that state, okay? I mean, you don't find people like in New York, like, what's your favorite state? You know what? I really like that Mississippi. Let's forget that they probably learned to count by Mississippis at one point in their life, right? One Mississippi, two Mississippi. And they learned about crooked letter and humpback letter from the state of Mississippi. Look, I love my state, but when I think about that too, I think about the pride that the Bible talks about. Pride comes before the fall, and how pride is sometimes where we invest in self and we're not invested in God. All of this came to a culmination for me when I got to the book of Philippians, and Paul uses the word pride often, but he always associates it with the idea of in Christ, and why I have tried to continually bestow praise upon the Etheridge congregation for the last couple of weeks. I've tried to consistently associate that where it should be associated. In Christ. Pride. Have you ever been called smart or brilliant or intelligent? Did you enjoy those? Eli's like, I've never been called them words. I'm sorry, Eli, that was wrong. Only Cracker Barrel jumping those pegs. if you've been called those words before, I wonder how you felt. When you recall those words. I want you to know when I was a young preacher, I stood back in the foyer a whole lot more than I do now. And I had a lady leave, and she took my hand and she looked at me and she goes, "You are so funny." And I felt absolutely terrible for at least a month after that. Now, again, I know you don't understand that, but I wasn't trying to be funny. I was trying to get people to see God, and all she saw was me being funny. I'm not saying that's all she saw, but that's all I heard. I don't always hear positive well. I don't always hear negative well. But you know what I'm saying? I've stood back there before and I've had someone say to me, "You're brilliant." First of all, I'm not brilliant. I mean, I may be bright. That's because I need to bathe. If I'm shiny, I need to bathe. But I know that at one point in my life, I stood in front of a woman who was giving me mental counseling. And she asked me what I wanted to be in the future. And I didn't tell her I wanted to be brilliant. I told her I wanted to be able to pick up a newspaper and look at every section of that newspaper and at least know what I was reading and what was going on. And I left there and I had a drive that I was going to get to a place where one day I could sit at a coffee shop or Susu's with my pimento cheese sandwich, kick back a little drink and have a paper that I could read every section of that paper. Whether it be economics or whatever, and I would have an idea of what I was reading about. But I never want to be this person who is so consumed that I need people to tell me that I'm brilliant. I'm thankful to a theologian by the name of Helmut Thielicke, and he wrote a book called A Small Exercise for Young Theologians. And it's about how what you need to do for the first 10 years of your study of God is just shut up. And I know that's a bit abrasive, but it's true. And he develops this idea called the theological hammer. He's like, when you begin to learn about God and you know him because you've spent all this time studying about God, you probably know more about God than the people that you're talking to. And what we have a tendency to do is to take out that theological hammer instead of gently pull them into the knowledge of God. We'll just hit them with a hammer. And so his advice was just be quiet. And I didn't necessarily learn to be quiet from that. I definitely learned to hold thoughts back more often than I did before. But what I learned from that was that I never get to a place where I feel that I am so knowledgeable about God that I just have so much to offer everyone. I've said this to you before. One of the most difficult things being a preacher is when you walk into a room, everybody thinks you're the smartest person in the room about God. Now, that may be true or may not be true. I'm going to say in this situation, it's absolutely not true. I know too many of the people in this room. But you think that. And so that leads to the difficulty of allowing pride and power to corrupt me. So pride is the first way. The second way, it becomes our greatest pursuit. You know these people. You know these people that just, they get immersed into the pursuit of knowledge. And it just goes too far. I want to read to you from the author of Ecclesiastes for a moment. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation. And who increases knowledge increases sorrow. The words of the wise are like goads and like nails firmly fixed and are collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. My son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making money book, of making many books, there is no end. And much study is a weariness of the flesh. His point in all of this is it is impossible to know everything. It's impossible. I don't know my level of smartness, if you will, but God taught me so much through the family that I was reared by. Coming up with men that could not read and write, I had to understand when I got older and started thinking about reading a paper and understanding everything that I read, to me, seemed to be smart. But now that I'm older, I realized I had men in my life for years that couldn't read a lick that were very, very, very smart. I don't know how they even went to places to order parts for tractors because they couldn't write and read. But they did it, and they could fix things, and their understanding of the internal combustion engine is dumbfounding to me as I look back on that thing, and that these men could not read, but yet they knew exactly how that engine worked. And when something broke, they knew what it broke and why it was causing a problem. And I know this one is so redneck, but it is true. We had a square bale baler. That I'm telling you, it was held together with baling wire. I know that is the old saying, but it broke down every year we ever used that thing. But somehow they would cut baling wire and they would take care and wrap it around, tie this and that, tie that. Before it was over with, we would go through it and we would be able to do it. I had graduated school with a boy named Tojo, so you can imagine the depths of intelligence with Tojo. And Tojo fixed brakes his entire life, and he fixed this little tool, just one little tool, that would slide behind a brake pad and make it pop out easily. Now, I don't know anything about brakes, so don't get me to lying. But he developed this tool. It was just a tool that he could slide behind brake pads and pop them out of the place, and they'd go back in. And now there's no telling what Tojo's worth. And I'm not sure, again, that he could read and write, but he was smart enough to know that if he could just fix this little device that would pop this brake pad out of this plane, he could do some stuff, and he did. There's different levels of smarts. And what we need to always be aware of is in our pursuit of whatever, that we're never going to get to a point where we know everything. So it's a useless and vain search. And listen to what the book of Acts says about the Athenians. This is Acts 17, verse 21. Now all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling and hearing something new. I've told this before and I'll tell it again. we have suffered from in our own congregation because of what I'm about to tell you. But there are three ways to receive new information. First is to hear something new and to go back into your life and cast away everything you've learned up until that point and live the rest of your life in what I would call a lust of the new. I would say that our congregation has suffered from this before, since I've been here, where an individual discovered something new, and instead of going back and weighing it against what they'd learned up until that point, they just cast it all off and went for a lust for the new. The second way is to hear something new and to reject it, and to go back into a bubble of what you already know and never leave that bubble again and just accept what you know, and that's all that's going to be known. We would call that individual closed-minded. The other way is to receive new information, to weigh it against what you already know, and make a decision in your life through prayer, through faith, and through honest thought about a direction to go. I had a preacher tell me one time that a cow can chew briars and grass and keep the grass and spit out the briars. That's how I define that one. The last way that it becomes is it's an end in and of itself. In John 5, 39 through 40, Jesus makes this startling observation about some of the religious leaders in his day. You search the scriptures because you think that in them you have eternal life. And it is they that bear witness about me, yet you refuse to come to me that you may have life. So we get back to our discussion about Jack. Is that it? Heard a bell. Fire alarm. Everybody get outside. Okay. All right, so I got to speed up. So we get back to our discussion here with this point that Jesus makes to these people that study the scriptures constantly, but yet the scriptures are pointing to him. If we miss the point of the scriptures in it describing to us a God who loves us and a God who wants us to have a relationship with him, then we've missed it all. It's the illustration that I use. I used about Carson. You remember me and Carson came up to this, when I was looking out of this window, and it was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen in my life. And Carson comes up and goes, "Whoo, that's double pain. You think they got that at Lowe's?" He starts talking about the window. Right? Like, do you not see outside that beautiful woman? Sometimes we get too focused on the window instead of what the window, what we can see through the window. And the Bible is a window to show us God. We don't worship the Bible. The Bible is absolutely necessary for us to get into a journey and an understanding and depth of our relationship knowledge of God. But it's not our God. It leads us to our God. And so a pursuit of knowledge in that form or fashion is one of those things that is fruitless. And also, let's just say that I'm dying, and I wanted to write a book about my wife for her future husband. Because she'd have to get married again. I mean, I've done everything for her. She's just blessed I'm alive, okay? I'm joking. Please understand I'm joking. But let's say I was going to write a book for the next husband she married, and I was going to, in detail, describe who my wife was, what she enjoyed, and all of that. And I gave it, as I died, she finds some very cute guy to marry, whatever. And they give him that book, and he reads it before they're married. Does he know everything he needs to know about Anna Reed, you think? This is one of those things I love to tell preachers. I don't do lessons on five things that make your marriage better, because there's 150,000 things that make your marriage better, and they change daily, right? If a woman is involved, and I don't mean that ugly, it's the truth, they change daily, right? Like if I kiss my wife on her cheeks, oh, I love that. So I decide I'm going to kiss her there every day. You think that's going to last very long? Why do you keep kissing me on my cheek? Do something new. I'm a creature of habit. I can do this. And then you're going to go and change on me, right? Kind of deal. So obviously, you couldn't take a book that I wrote about someone who was not me and understand everything that you needed to know about her. No, you'd have to spend time with her. And I believe that this is the point that has been missed most by mankind. For us to come into a true understanding and knowledge and relationship with God, we must walk with him. We must become sensitive to the things that he wants us to be sensitive to. We must develop ears and eyes that see and hear like God wants us to see and hear. And we can only do that by spending time with him and allowing him to chisel at our ugly and mold our good And that is my lesson for tonight. Any thoughts? Jeff, you got anything you want to say? You just look like you're full of something to say. I don't know.
My last trip
you took. What was it?
Went to Nauvoo, Illinois.
Nauvoo, Illinois.